I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Miracle Voices. I'm Matt McCabe, and here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how are you doing today?
Still have COVID, but doing okay. Excuse me. I'm going to mute when I'm coughing.
Oh, boy. Well, we hope you get better really soon here. How many days has it been?
Oh, what day is today? That's how I feel.
November 3rd.
Oh, you're telling me November, not like it has to be Thursday. Our podcast. Okay, so it's already 8 days in.
Okay.
So anyway, so, I am glad to be here, and I'm not really a body, and I am free, and I'm bringing that here.
Well, I'm pleased to welcome our guest, Miranda Arie, to Miracle Voices. Miranda, welcome.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Tam. Such a pleasure to be here.
And where are you joining us from today, Miranda?
I'm joining from Yorkshire in the UK, a little town called Leeds.
Great. Nice. Great tea there. You and I spoke about that before, but the Yorkshire tea is wonderful. Great area to be from.
It is the greatest tea we have here, Yorkshire tea.
And I at the end of the show, I always mention my, or we mention our favorite comfort food, but I've never mentioned mine. And it's a tiffin, which you probably know what one is kind of from the north of the UK, is like a cross between a cookie and a brownie.
Lush.
Yes.
And yours.
What'd you say, Tam?
You've been holding back this whole time. I like every time I bring up a new one and you haven't mentioned yours.
That's my ultimate favorite. I once ate a pan of tiffins. It's like, they're so good. And I've never seen them anywhere else besides like north UK.
This must be backwards day. We're doing comfort foods first. Well,
we're not going to ask her comfort food till the end. So I just wanted to throw that out there while I was thinking about it.
But I do need to now bring in Yorkshire pudding. It's pretty amazing. So just to start on that note, I could feel pretty happy.
Well, we go on and on about this, but it's like a Rick Steves travel podcast, but we'll move on. Miranda, perhaps you could just start with telling us how A Course in Miracles came into your life.
Oh, gosh. A Course in Miracles came into my life in a time of really, really deep suffering. I guess like my mental health was at a real low. I'd had a massive trigger in my life and I just felt a lot of trauma coming up from my past. And I felt deeply incapacitated by that at the time. And like in the body, I was like, you know, laid in bed, unable to get up, struck with, deep perceived suffering in the body. And I'd read many Eckhart Tolle books, Gabby Bernstein, like many different like spiritual teachers and authors for the previous few years. And they'd always banded around the term A Course in Miracles, like A Course in Miracles says this, A Course in Miracles said that. And I don't know, for some reason, laying in my bed, I remember the moment I just ordered it from my bed. A Course in Miracles, I just felt called to do it. Next day delivery, because it was a matter of urgency, you know, the prescription of the miracle text. And yet just started doing the workbook the next day. Now, I did the workbook for about 36 days, I think, and then I stopped for about 3 or 4 months, just couldn't keep up with it. And then again, the suffering just came back really intensely. I was really laid up with a lot of trauma coming up again. And that's when I grabbed the book again and I was like, right, come on. And I stuck to it for the full year and I've been studying it ever since. And it's completely, utterly transformed my life around, like following the teachings and, it's just been mind-blowing for me, to be honest. My whole life has transformed in every single way. My relationships, my career, my happiness, my joy, my whole living situation, the way I manage any triggers. Everything in my life has transformed since studying the course. So yeah, I give great thanks for this miraculous book.
Yeah. And what kind of trauma was going on that was coming up? Is it, if you're comfortable talking about?
Absolutely, yeah. So like, you know, as a child, like I was brought up with quite a difficult home life. Well, you know, it was difficult at the time, but I give great thanks for it now, if I'm honest, which I'll talk more about in a bit. But, you know, I had a lot of like physical and verbal and emotional abuse at home. And then I ran away from home when I was in my teenage years. I was about 14 years old. I kept running away from home and I eventually got put in foster care. I don't know. You have, I think you call it foster care in the US as mm-hmm. well, like care. And then I ended up actually getting sectioned under the Mental Health Act here, which meant that I lived in an adolescent psychiatric unit at the age of 14 for about 9 months. And, you know, the psychiatrists in there were really the only parental role I had. And I was suffering a lot in hospital and I'd harmed myself really severely. And that's why I got put in there, because things had got really bad in my life. And I'd kind of lost, well, there must have been a glimmering of hope somewhere in there. But yeah, I'd lost a lot of hope and felt really, really low and suffering with extreme anxiety. And then in hospital, you know, when I was distressed, I guess they didn't know how to manage me or where to put me or what to do with me. So their kind of protocol was to sedate me and against my will. And so it was kind of like being pushed from pillar to post. There was a lot going on there. And as you can imagine, this caused me to paint a pretty shoddy identity for myself, which, you know, one of the things I really love about A Course in Miracles, because it's throughout the years, it's just reminded me who I am beyond all those misperceptions I created about myself in response to the trauma. And to me, that's what forgiveness means. And that's what it's become to mean to me.
Mm. And so you, what age were you when you discovered A Course in Miracles? Just trying to get context here.
Oh, so it was only about 3 years ago, not long ago at all. So okay. About between 3 and 4 years ago.
Okay. And how do you feel like your life's changed since adopting forgiveness as an attitude? And
one second, Matt. I just want to give the listeners a frame of reference. Like, what decade are you in now?
I'm in my 30s, so I'm 38 years old now. I mean, to be honest, it might have only been 3 years ago that I first picked up the course. Mm-hmm. Because I was headhunted for my job shortly afterwards, actually. Like when I started really dedicating myself to my teachers, like I say, every area of my life changed deeply, dramatically. So it must have only been about 3 years ago. So I'll have been about 35 years old, you know. Many decades of of deep conditioning and imaginings of people harming me and
sorry, Matt, your question.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, how has forgiveness changed my life? Well, it's completely transformed the way I view myself and others and the way I view the world. And it's helped me enter a state of way more presence in my life than I ever thought possible, than I ever even knew existed, in truth. So, you know, forgiveness to me, I work in mental health. And I work sort of supporting trauma recovery now, which is just a path I found myself landed on when I started dedicating myself to the course. You know, trauma release to me is all about forgiving the misperceptions we created about ourselves in response to trauma. And A Course in Miracles supported me to reframe what forgiveness means, because a lot of the time, and I've seen it many, many times because I run a lot of mental health groups, and the first time you mention the word forgiveness, you know, the F word, a lot of people, they churn in their seats. And I guess we would know that as the ego responding to this word. And they say, how can I forgive? How can I possibly forgive? Look what they did to me. Look what the world did to me. Look what the system did to me, my mother, my father, et cetera, et cetera. How can I possibly? And there's almost like a ferocity that comes with this. And what A Course in Miracles has done for me is support me to completely understand this word and the meaning of this word in a completely new light, where it's become to mean to me about witnessing the limiting core beliefs that I created about myself and the world in response to the difficult events that happened to me in my life, which store in the body. And you know, as Tam said at the beginning of this chat, you know, I'm not a body, I am free. You know, that's not a lesson that I understood that much within the first couple of years of studying the course. But realistically, you know, when trauma, in inverted commas, happens to us, especially in childhood or any space in our life, when trauma perceivedly happens to us in our lives, we're not able to adequately process it at the time, because sometimes our nervous systems and our bodies are very overwhelmed. So what happens is we create an identity for ourselves out of the trauma. So, and that stores in the body. Those memories store in the body. And then we start to create protector parts, which A Course in Miracles would call a defense. You know, if I defend myself, I am attacked. You know, so we might tell ourselves, we might see it, for example, as a child, if we're not getting consistent love, this is just an average example that a lot of people come forth with, you know, if we're not getting consistent love, you know, sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not that unconditional love that we dream of. If we're getting conditional love, when we're good, we get it. When we do a certain thing, we get it. If we're bad, in inverted commas, we don't get it. And if we're brought up in that way, that child may create a story, a belief about themselves. I am not worthy of love. I'm not good enough. If I fail, I will be punished. My needs do not matter, et cetera, et cetera. So we have all these old stories. And sadly, the child creates an identity for themselves out of these stories. And then when we start to live life in that defense through the lens of those stories, through the lens of our past, we're unable to adequately see the truth of who we are in the present moment. And what A Course in Miracles has wonderfully done for me is frame forgiveness in that light, that forgiveness to me now is all about witnessing and releasing these old stories, and then forgiveness of the other or other people, system, situation, circumstance happens completely organically. It's miraculous. It's the only word to use for it is that it is miraculous. And so I would always say to people, when they first start looking at forgiveness, the word forgiveness or what it means to them, take the other person, situation, circumstance or event completely out of it. And like lesson 41, God goes with me wherever I go, beautifully states, we want to look at that process of turning inwards and looking at within this trigger, what old story is coming to light here? How can I forgive that story? How can I release that story and return to the truth of who I am?
Yeah. that's a radical thing to be doing in the world. But I agree. Very, very helpful. Were you going to say something, Tam?
I was just going to say it's fantastic. It's very, very, very powerful. And the way that you're framing it is very powerful. I mean, it so does. I mean, I've experienced it does when the lens is turned on ourselves and our own forgiveness. Mm-hmm. It flips everything upside down or inside out, I should say. And so the following of the people and the external reasons that you've held accountable, they fall away, especially the deeper we get to realize that it's all one dream And that each one of those people had their own stories that they were reacting to that were untrue and spilling it all over us even. And so to forgive all of it releases ourselves, but also releases everyone else. And that's, you know, the ultimate meaning of salvation here. You know, we, none of us are accountable, even though we are, you know, in the level of form. Okay, well, someone murdered someone. There is consequences with that and to that. But actually, in the world of illusion and dream, it's the history of it, the all the stories that went into making that. Once that's forgiven, it unties a knot and we get to return home.
Oh, yeah. And I love what you said there, Tam, especially about, you know, other people being in their own stories. You know, we don't want to mistake someone's ego for who they are in truth. You know, that's another glorious teaching from the Course in the realm of forgiveness. You know, your brother is sinless, you know, and you know, I've started to really implement that lesson completely radically, take it completely literally. Teach no one he has hurt you. My sinless brother is my guide to peace. My sinful brother is my guide to pain, and which I choose to see, I will behold. We cannot have inner peace if we are seeing someone else as guilty, because to give and to receive are one in truth. And then we throw that guilt upon ourselves because we're looking again. We're seeing ourselves as we could never be. So we look upon that world that is impossible. You know, if we are seeing someone else as bad or wrong or guilty or in attack of us, etc., instead of the call for love, which it can only really be in truth if someone's in pain, we're not going to have inner peace. So it's like, for me, like within the Course, like what I've had to, it's very, very simple and basic, but I've had to keep throughout this journey, reminding myself in every situation, hang on a minute, Miranda, remember you want peace above all else, above every single other thing in this world, above every single reaction that you're tempted to make or decision that your body's telling you to do, to say something, to do something, to react, etc., etc. Remember, you want inner peace. Teach no one he has hurt you. Because if, you know, the manual for teachers beautifully states, teach no one he has hurt you. And I've literally written that up on my bedroom wall in permanent marker. Teach no one he has hurt you. And teach myself, no one has hurt me either. You know, and I'm very, very aware there might be people listening for whom that feels very radical and actually might feel very perceivedly painful, because then they might even say, you know, but aren't we then just condoning what the other has done? Aren't we then condoning? No, forgiveness is not about that. You know, like you said before, Tam, it's not about condoning or justifying. It's about, again, we return to ourselves. We release that misperception about ourselves, because fear is deception. And then it's about a witnessing that only hurt people hurt people. Only hurt people hurt people. And you know, we can only be in one of two expressions, an expression of love or a call for love and help. You know, so I just love what the Course does in making things very, very simple. You know, and I remember, like, when I first picked up the text, especially, I was like, oh my God. And in the manual for teachers, it even calls them, it even says that it's the more abstract volume, doesn't it? But like, I remember feeling like, oh God, this is really complex. So I went back to the workbook pretty quickly after that. But actually, the more I've studied the Course, I'm like, oh my God, it's the simplest teachings for inner peace you could possibly have. There are only two thought systems, and in every single situation that I possibly find myself in, I can choose one or the other. And if we've been conditioned in a certain way, and the body's been conditioned and our nervous system has been conditioned, and we've believed that we're a body, so we believe all the feelings buzzing around in our body. If we've been conditioned in that way, reconditioning is completely possible. Healing is completely possible, and the return to the truth of who we are and the witnessing of our true identity within ourselves and each other, because we are one, is completely possible. And I carry that faith with me now, and it's brought about entirely from studying, you know, this remarkable course.
You know, the way that you're going about it is just so fierce and brave. You know, it really is just passionate and fierce and brave. And I see, you know, your history has brought you to it in that way instead of victimized. It's like, I'm going to do something to change the story. It is not working. And it's fantastic how your enthusiasm has completely embraced it. And the notion that only hurt people is really so much at the core of it. And that you call it a simplistic teaching. It is. I love when people get to that. It has more words, about over 10,000 words or something. I always forget numbers, but it has a lot of words in this course and a lot of complex psychological terminology within it. But it is such a simple teaching. And as we get it, the words all unravel. And that's why I love, you know, the part that says, and now forget this course, forget everything and walk me holy unto God. And I may be misquoting a little, but that's what it says. In essence, because it's that simple, it's about choice. And the other part that goes here is like how passionate you are. But I'd like to remind the listeners that the other thing it says is it only takes a little willingness. And the full force is gorgeous. And it's just lights up my own inner being as I hear you reflecting it. But also if someone's sitting there going, I don't have that, you don't need it. A little willingness. Just a little.
Yeah.
Different.
We're all just tapping into your flow state here, Miranda. Yeah. This is wonderful.
Yes.
Miranda, now with your partner, do you work for forgiveness? How does that happen? I notice on your submission, you said, hey, I do forgiveness with my partner too. How does that process go? You guys.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Well, it's completely transformed the relationship entirely. Forgiveness work and you know, the lesson from the manual for teachers, teach no one he has hurt you, because I used to be in a place within the relationships, particularly because I reckon that, you know, the special relationship as the course beautifully puts it. I reckon the special relationship on some level, it kind of reflects our caregiver wounds on some level. I mean, I know it did for me for sure. And you know, I was in this pattern throughout so many of my relationships, you know, because I had like the absence of a father as a child. So I guess, you know, I don't even want to intellectualize it too deeply or psychoanalyze, but, you know, on some level, you know, I wanted to, you know, like the course says, seek vengeance on the past through my special relationship, you know, and it says the special relationship is the ego's chief weapon to seek vengeance on the past. You know, there's intimate relationships that we have with our one special partner, etc. You know, for some people, it's many partners, of course, you know, so the way that I used to present was very much trying to seek vengeance on the past. I need you to do this. I'm feeling triggered. So I need you to show up like this. You're not showing up enough for me. You need to change. You need to change what you're doing. And it was very frantic, actually. And it used to happen a lot more when I had PMT, like when my period was due, like, and my hormones were coming up more in the body. So it was very much this state of, I'm not getting what I need. I'm not getting what I need. And I was in this permanent state of this in relationships. You know, that person needs to change. That person needs to comfort me and make sure I'm okay. That person needs to do this to stop my trigger, to make my body feel more safe, to make me feel safe in this relationship. And I was like trying to be a puppeteer. And actually, it was very exhausting. And actually, on some level, it made me feel like I had some amount of control. But in truth, I was just reliving the past. You know, this little girl, this, you know, I've done a lot of inner child healing work, which I kind of was drawn to through the teachings of the course as well, even though the course doesn't particularly talk about inner child healing work, you know, but I was very much letting this little girl me almost, this past me, this misperception I created about myself, be at the steering wheel there. Now, when I discovered, I have like a Course in Miracles study group here in the UK, And we share the teachings that are really powerful for us. And they're amazing running buddies, the girls, like giving a shout out to Tatiana, Candy and Carrie here. You know, one of them said within the group, Tatiana, she said, oh God, I've just reread like chapter 14 and it's saying, teach no one he has hurt you. Oh God. And that lesson, I thought, okay, I'm going to be literal with this as well. I'm going to really implement this very, very literally in my life. Teach no one he has hurt you. So I just practiced so much discipline and vigilance with this idea as an experiment, as a challenge, just as a challenge to myself. And, you know, I'm going to set this challenge, teach no one he has hurt you. And the amount of emotional trigger and sort of feelings of old trauma coming up in the body was really, really deeply intense, actually. And I went into like all sorts of weird trauma responses in my body, you know, not speaking out. I need you to do this. I need you to send me a good night message so I feel safe, or I need you, not doing any of that. And reminding myself what I want is peace, and that only this teaching can bring me peace. Oh my God. And it just completely transformed my relationship. It's completely transformed my relationship. I can't put it into any more words than that, but actually recognizing the other person is sinless allows them to show up more beautifully than ever. We don't, you know, anything we see on the external in a relationship that we have with someone else, whether it's our colleague, our boss, our partner, our child, anything we're having reflected back to us, any way that we perceive what that other person is doing or not doing is only ever a reflection of our internal state. So when we have that process of turning inwards, that's when we start to get these remarkable effects, which, you know, for the last like about 40 days now, I've only been doing the lesson, God goes with me wherever I go. Mm-hmm. I've only been doing that one lesson, which describes beautifully turning inwards. I'm like, God, I mean, just doing one lesson on its own is so powerful. So teach no one is hurt. You transform my relationship entirely. Seeing the other as guiltless, seeing the other as sinless, and recognizing that any time that I have a trigger in the present moment, it's only an opportunity for me to turn inwards and heal. But I would really, really like to reiterate here, like Tam was just saying before, it does only take the little willingness. And I'm aware that I'm delving into these teachings like really quite radically and with a lot of discipline right now, especially for where I'm at in my life, maybe only for the last few months, even in this kind of momentum with just loads of stuff that's been going on in my life. It's you know, thrown me deeper into these teachings, but I wasn't like this to start with. Oh my God, I didn't know how I was going to get past lesson number 3. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't, and I did only have the little willingness. I was grabbing onto a thread. I had the little willingness. That's all I had, the little willingness. That is all it takes. And the, you know, as soon as we start to surrender to complete faith and trust that every situation, this is a beautiful course quote, every situation properly perceived becomes an opportunity to heal. As soon as we start to thoroughly believe that, the healing is just, well, we kind of recognize we're healed already.
Yeah. Something I just want to bring up here because I notice it in me is that what I love is how you are taking the stance of everyone else's guiltlessness, which of course is what the course teaches. And the memory in me comes up of like Jerry Jampolsky, who I love dearly, who had befriended my mother. They were doing the course together. And in his early days of the course, they say he used to do some things that from a child's perspective, which I was at the time, a teenager, was really unkind. And then someone would call him on it and say, you know, that really hurt me. That's not my responsibility. You're only responsible for your own actions. You're projecting on me and it's all you. And it felt like such a misunderstanding of the course at that time. It put me off from the course partially because I was seeing that not just with Jerry, but other people which felt like a misinterpretation just to my soul. And what it really was, and as I see him grow older and older in practice, was his doing what you're doing instead of, I can do anything. I have free permission now to do anything because anyone else's response is theirs, to, oh, everyone else is actually guiltless and I choose to be kind because that's closer to my real state.
Yes, I think you've raised a really important point there, actually, Tam, because we want to see everyone else as guiltless. But also, if somebody comes to us and says, what you've said or done has hurt me, well, only in truth, only our ego would go into defense around that. Because in truth, like, we have to honor everybody's experience. And I discovered a lot. I'm always discovering new lines in the course, which I'm like blow my mind because of, you know, and I'm sure I'll carry on forever discovering lines in the course. I'm like, oh my God, you know, but a couple of weeks ago, discovered a line that I can't remember the exact wording. You might know it better than me, but it says something along the lines of, if your brother asks you to do something outrageous, do it. I remember reading that going like, oh my God, I've not encountered that line before. It's something. Do you know the line of me?
I totally know that line. And there's a second part to that line that amazingly few people remember to add, only if it doesn't hurt someone.
Yourself or someone else.
Right? Only if it doesn't hurt you or the other. Yeah. Now, yeah.
And so really, people forget that other part of the line. And I've heard it over and over again. It's like, yeah, I did it because da da da. And I was like, but that, I mean, stupid feelings that someone's asking you something foolish, that's one thing. But
absolutely. You know,
that old, are you going to jump off the bridge?
Yeah, so certainly we don't want to be going into that, do we, where we just do, okay, I'll blindly do whatever anyone tells me to. But when it comes to things like someone asking for an apology, I mean, I think it's like, you know, if our only goal is inner peace, people are all at different levels of, like, whatever you want to call it, consciousness or healing or whatever we want to call it. And if someone comes and they go, I'm really, really feel really deeply wounded, the course isn't saying you don't need to say sorry and tell the other person that they need to, you need to turn inwards and look at yourself. It's not about that. We can also completely honor someone's experience and go, wow, I can really, I'm going to understand your experience there. And I honor your perception there and I honor your experience. And if they really want you to apologize, I mean, it's not harming you or anyone else, is it? It's like, wow, I'm sorry. You know,
I'm just going to insert here, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm not just talking. It in. It's from text 16.1 here. It says, I have said that if a brother asks a foolish thing of you, to do it, but be certain that this does not mean to do a foolish thing that would hurt either him or you, for what would hurt one will hurt the other. Foolish requests are foolish merely because they conflict, since they always contain some element of specialness. Only the Holy Spirit recognizes foolish needs as well as real ones, and he will teach you how to meet both without losing either.
Oh, it's just exquisite, isn't it? It's so powerful. That teaching is so, so powerful because, you know, we can come at the, you know, throughout different stages, you know, there's been times when I've been more stagnant, you know, well, not stagnant, but like not as active with my learning, etc. Well, we're always active in our learning, really, aren't we, in truth? But, you know, basically, there's a sense of, even if we go through these stages of like real discipline, right? No, I'm going to sit through this trigger and I'm really going to practice great discipline with this idea and this vigilance. There is a sense of gentleness about this work and not attack. Mm-hmm. There is a sense of complete gentleness about this work. And the course, the way it speaks, I mean, to me, it's like poetry. It's like, I don't know, like,
Well, some of it's an iambic pentameter, which literally is poetry, but
yeah, it literally is
what you're saying. Yes, the sound, the beauty of it, just the place that poetry can hit.
It is, but then on the other end as well, what I really, really love about it is that it doesn't take any crap. It says the ego is insane. It doesn't beat around the bush. The course does not beat around the bush. It's like, how foolish are our fears? The ego is insane. You know, are you likening yourself to a piece of dust? You know, it's very direct, but it's so, I don't know, the words just go in a different way than any other teachings from any other spiritual texts ever have, like for me on a personal level anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the response been working with individuals in the national health system in the UK to forgiveness? Is there kind of a spectrum response to the idea of forgiveness and with trauma, or what's kind of the response been?
It's been absolutely phenomenal, to be honest with you, Matt. You know, within 3 weeks of people. So I've created like an 8-week group work program called the Heroes Group Work Program. Stands for Healing, Education and Recovery of Emotional Strength. And it's been rolling out throughout doctor surgeries in the UK, in the national health system here. Within 3 weeks of people going on that program, their depression anxiety scale scores have gone dramatically down, which is kind of unheard of, really. And we're teaching forgiveness in these sessions, you know, and this week has been week six called The True Meaning of Forgiveness. And we partake in a little exercise within the group, and we get red lenses and we get blue lenses and we get clear lenses. And we get all the patients to hold the red lens in front of their eyes and look around the room with the red lens. And we say, okay, you look through that red lens. Look, everything is red in this room. We get them to hold up the blue lens. Okay, look through this blue lens. Everything is blue in the room. Get them to look through the clear lens. Okay, look, everything is as it is through the body's eyes in this room. And then we get them to look at a situation that they cannot forgive. We tell them, you know, is it a grievance that you're holding onto from the past? And we just get them to touch on it. We don't dig too deep in it. And then we tell them, take the other person out of it. We're not going to look at that right now. Okay, we're not going to look. And, you know, I did used to look at the other person when I first developed the program. You know, it's been through a lot of process. People didn't react well to that. The ego doesn't react well to that. So, you know, looking at the other person. So we start very gently and we just go, take the other person completely out of it. We honor your experience. Take the other person completely out of it. Take the situation completely out of it. Turn inwards. What belief did you create about the world and your identity in response to that trauma? And we have people coming out with sentences. We get them to put them in I am statements. And you know, it's stories like the world is a frightening place. And it's stories like nobody in this world likes me. And stuff like my needs do not matter in this world. So we have these stories and we write them up on the flip chart. And then we get that clear lens and we get each patient to write on their clear lens that old story. This world is a frightening place. I don't belong in this world. We get them to hold up that lens and they look around the room through that lens with that story written on it. And then we explain, every time you're triggered in the present moment, this is what you need to forgive. This is the story that we want to look at releasing, this core belief that you've created about the world in response to what happened to you. So we look at forgiveness from that angle. We don't look at the other person at all. And it's such a beautiful way for people to start forgiveness, I feel, you know, after trialing it the hard way, you know, trying to get people to forgive the other person. It didn't work at first, you know. And then we go through a really beautiful exercise using the words of the course. We write in big letters up on the wall, I loose the world from all I thought it was. And one by one, each person in that group takes a wet wipe and wipes it over the board and says, I loose the world from all I thought it was. And they get a big round of applause. And it is so powerful. It's so powerful. And, you know, it's so moving. And it really gets people to sort of see physically, because we can talk about theory all we want. Do you know what I mean? We can go talking about, you know, theory, but sometimes that interactive work that we can do with people as practitioners, you know, and as teachers and students, I mean, they're one and the same, aren't they? But if we go through that with the touch, with the the writing, the feeling, the looking at each other's boards. And you know, if we go through those interactive experiences, people seem to really get it. And it's just been so incredible. And that's the stuff that we're prescribing in the doctor's surgeries here in Leeds in the UK now. And we're really hoping to expand. Like we've had some very exciting meetings this week, actually, like about potentially expanding this Heroes group work program, because it's going down so well. And it's something that the mental health system isn't currently offering, you know, and people really get it. You know,
do you have partners in this that you're doing this with who are doing the same work as you, or are you leading, you know, your own path here?
Yeah, I basically designed this service in lockdown, just in a response to people being in isolation. I was doing like one-on-one coaching on the phones just for all the patients in the primary care network in the NHS. I landed up in this job like a month before lockdown hit. I was on the phones. I was like, oh my God. And people were all talking about isolation. I was like, right, I'm just going to bring people together. I'm going to make sure that they don't have to wear masks in that space. You know, if they don't feel comfortable to, I'm going to bring them together. I'm going to make sure it's safe. And, you know, and bring them together with these teachings that I love so much. And I've ended up writing a book, like just from the handouts that I wrote. And then very, very, very fortunately, I was able to train up two of the patient ambassadors at the surgery. So I trained up two incredible patient ambassadors called Sarah and Sharon, who are now running the groups. And I'm going to move on and train more people to run these groups. And, you know, I've written a whole manual on training the facilitators, and, you know, all of the teachings within there are from my interpretation of the manual for teachers. Do not see anyone as sick. Do not create an identity for anyone out of their past, you know, and this is the way people heal, you know, because as a practitioner, if we see someone as their label, as their diagnosis, as their box, as their past, as a, you know, a wounded child, it's very limiting. We don't want to see anyone as sick. And so that's the way that I'm training the facilitators for Heroes. And it's just been the most fulfilling life of work I've ever done in my life. You know, it's just, I just love it.
Yay. Really? That's fantastic.
That sounds like a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be great for alcohol and drug rehabs too. Those are great.
Great for anything.
Great for anything, yeah.
Forgiveness is good for everything.
Anywhere there's a grievance, right? Yeah.
It just feels so exciting and funny because, like, you know, the mental health system in the UK, and it's probably the same all over the world, you know, we've become very reliant on like a medication-based treatment, haven't we? Like across the world, pharmaceutical-based treatment for mental health problems. Yeah, I'm sure on some level it serves a purpose, you know, and, you know, in the past, like I was on medication and stuff like this, you know, I'm not against any form of treatment in inverted commas, you know, but essentially, like, it's like putting a plaster on a broken leg and expecting it to heal. We want to go to that trauma, pull it out by the root. We want to really, really release these misperceptions. And really what we want to do is remind everyone the truth of who they are, you know, the Holy Son of God himself, you know, it's like, I want to remind people of who they are, you know, and you know, one of my favorite lessons from the entire course is fear is deception. You know, fear is not justified in any form. Fear is deception. It attests that you have seen yourself as you could never be, and this look upon a world that is impossible. And then it's just about saying, like, well, anytime I'm in fear, I'm feeling fear. Oh my God, have I forgotten who I am again? Have I forgotten who I am? And it's that process of being able to remind people who they are, believe in them, see the Holy Son of God in them. It doesn't matter if they're a perpetrator of a crime. It doesn't matter if they're coming in saying that they've, you know, harmed someone or they've been harmed themselves. It doesn't matter. There is no order of difficulties. It does not matter. We see them only as the Holy Son of God, only as the light, you know. Yeah. And it reminds us of who we are, because to give and to receive one in truth. So it's like the ultimate healing experience when we go step into supporting the healing of others.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for what you're doing.
Yeah, Miranda, this is a wonderful modality, I guess you'd call it, what you're bringing to the NHS. I really hope that takes off.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much.
It sounds like it already is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is at the moment, which is really exciting.
Well, when you get caught in an ego storm, Miranda, it sounds like you've got a lot of, you know, you've got a lot of close, course in your head, so you can throw these things out. But sometimes it just feels like we're in the body and it's real and we're stomping our foot and gritting our teeth. And when that happens, how do you get out of it? Do you have any kind of pattern or anything you do that helps you kind of get recentered into a forgiveness process?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, self-compassionate practice has been like completely priceless to me. Like, you know, I don't know if you guys have studied self-compassionate practice too much or heard much about it, but essentially it's working on the relationship that we have with ourselves. You know, so when I started classing my relationship with myself as my highest priority, I started to witness, you know, the abuser that I was living with in my mind, you know, the inner dialogue. I'd really recommend to anyone to start witnessing the way they talk to themselves in their head, because you might be quite surprised, you know. And we need to start having a zero tolerance policy for cruel words that we call ourselves and the way we speak to ourselves. And, you know, I guess like when I go into an ego attack now, like a lot of the time, like, you know, I'm doing it now, actually, just as I'm talking about it, but I place my right hand on my heart, my left hand on my lower abdomen. Just that taking some really, really deep breaths, you know, calm down the body, witnessing that I have the capacity to calm down my body, which in essence creates that split between the higher self and the ego on some level, you know, witnessing that I have the power to do that, to calm down the body, work with the body. The body's not the enemy, you know, and you know, when I first started studying the course, I was like, oh my God, the ego's the enemy. Oh my God, the body's the enemy. Oh, shut up, ego, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I've started to work with way more gentleness with my ego, like, and seeing it as a wounded part, you know. It's like this wounded part of me that only deserves love and compassion, doesn't deserve criticism or blame or shame. So to come to this space where I'm calming down the body, come to this space where I'm holding compassion for that wounded part and hearing the voice of that wounded part, you know, like I've said before, you know, those old stories that I created, am I telling myself I'm not worthy of love right now? Am I telling myself that I'm not good enough the way I am again? I'm hearing that voice of my inner child or the wounded part of me, my inner teenager, wherever it's from. I'm listening and I'm bringing that part closer. I'm not shunning that part. I'm not trying to get rid of an emotion, because when working with the body, a lot of struggles for me in the past used to come from me trying to get rid of the anxiety. I need to get rid of this feeling. I need to get rid of this emotion. I need to get rid of this regret or this. And instead now there's more of a surrendered state of being, which comes from kind of working with the body and working with self-compassionate practice and, you know, stepping into the body, like watching what's going on, hearing those old stories. Oh, I hear you're not feeling lovable again. Wow, I'm so sorry you're going through that right now. Come here. I'm going to teach you that you're safe. So it's almost like a dialogue going on with that part, you know, and then that's how we integrate a part, and we have, you know, and we integrate the ego. For me, it's like it didn't work when I started trying to get rid of the ego. I need to silence the ego. It's okay if the ego comes up, because I just don't have to believe in it anymore. And I can work with it with gentleness, kindness, compassion, you know, like I would someone else who came screaming in my face, because I know it's call for love, you know?
That's it. So there is, because it gets so complicated in a certain way, even though it's simple, but here you are, and we're saying, we don't see anyone else as sick. And yet you're talking about seeing your body as sick and saying, tell me why, and let me be compassionate. And there, you know, so there's mixed messages within the messages, but they really aren't, as you sort them through, it really, that's when compassion comes in, kindness and compassion. Because if someone's in front of you and you say, I don't see you as sick, that's not what you're talking about. And I'm very aware that's not what you're talking about. What you're talking about is giving the opportunity to release the story. And even our bodies hold a story. And we need to give our bodies the opportunity, even in the egoic realm of it, to go, let's let go of that ego part of the body. Mm-hmm. Let's let go of that thought, even within my own self, that's reflecting back at me that it is sick And how do I deal with that compassionately rather than stop? It's not real. Get out. Go away. Ignore it. Anything like that. And it does seem that, you know, I'm still on this path learning every day. But it does seem like compassion is an integral factor here.
Oh, yeah. Because it's like what I teach to the patients in the groups is that we want to step into the place of the comforter. And I just call it the comforter because it makes things very, very simple. If we're going through suffering, we're going through an ego attack, whatever we want to call it, resurfacing old trauma, et cetera, et cetera. If we're going through that, if our only job in that space is to comfort, well, then we create a split and we witness the duality. We witness the ego and the higher self, because who's doing the comforting and who's doing the being comforted? Do you know what I mean? We witness that within ourselves and we step into the comforter, which can only really come from the higher self, I think. You know, if we're really comforting ourselves, you know, which is, you know, and it might sound a little bit insane, you know, like these couple of different personalities within us. But if we're stepping into that role of the comforter, that can't really be coming from the ego. So we're almost able to watch the ego. It doesn't mean that suddenly it disappears, but it's
not about the comforter being a being unto itself. It's called love.
Oh, yes.
Settle back into a place of love, and compassion flows through within that love, and that's our true self, and that's the simplicity.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, compassion is key, isn't it? You know, like it's just such a powerful practice, and when, you know, the amount of stories that I hear every week about the way that people talk to themselves and the way that they see themselves and the way that they tell themselves that they're, you know, limited and weak and powerless. And we have to start to have a zero tolerance policy for this kind of way of speaking to ourselves, because it is self-harm. You know, it's like a lot of people go, oh, I don't self-harm. But then they go on to talk about how they beat themselves up over a mistake they made for a week on end. And it's like, well, that is, you know, it's going to cause a disruption of inner peace for sure, isn't it?
And I think it's a perfect segue to go from the comforter to the comfort food.
Oh, yes.
Look at you, Tam. You're such an orator. I love that. Now, we do have a tradition here, Miranda, and we talked about it a little bit at the beginning with the tiffins. Is there a comfort food that is your favorite? Maybe something that's coming up at the nice holiday markets that are in the UK, or any other thing you like? Is there anything that you think of when I say comfort food that jumps to mind?
Oh yeah. Do you know what? It's sausage and mash all the way. I don't know if you guys eat that much. I'm vegan, so I have like vegan sausages. But the vegan alternatives are really good nowadays. And I just love my sausage and mash. Like, mashed potato is just like, it's such great comfort food. With loads of gravy on top and a bit of veg, you know. For me, it's just like, it's wholesome. It's like starch. It's great. It could have been cooked by the Holy Spirit himself, you know.
I have to say, like, they've started taking even just plain, basic, yummy mashed potatoes, and putting garlic in it and putting different flavors in it and truffle mashed potatoes. It's just like, just mashed potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
And cream, right, Tim?
Salt. Yes, of course. Oh, butter, yeah. Cream. Yeah.
Absolutely love it. Mash, sausage and mash all the way. Like, yeah, 100%.
Love that. And I love hearing about your new, your old but unknown to me, comfort food, Matt.
That the just Tiffin. Sounds like, yeah.
Something from Harry Potter.
I ought to post you guys some, really, shouldn't I? I ought to post you a couple of boxes of Tiffin or something like that.
Never heard of it. I love it. It's just very magical. Oh, let's go have a tiffin.
Yeah, it's like a butterbeer or something.
Send me your address and I'll post you sometime. You'll love it.
Okay, great. I mean, it does have the word tiff in it. So it's like, is that a good thing? But I'm up for it.
I won't post you any mash. Don't worry. I won't be posting you mash and gravy.
That's okay. I would totally enjoy that. But Matt, I just don't want you to be in a tiff about your tiffins.
No. I think more of the word puffin, that bird, when I hear of tiffin. So I don't think of the tiff part. But Miranda, before we wrap up here, why don't you tell listeners how they can find you and connect with you on social media and wherever else you are?
Yeah, sure. So my handle on all the social media networks, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, is just at Miranda Arieh, which is MirandaArieh. Get in touch with me that way. I've also got a website if you want to contact me via that as well.
Great. And that website's your name?
Yeah, just Miranda Arieh.
Okay, that's great.
I'd be lovely to connect with whoever. And my inbox is always open if anyone ever wants to shoot a message across or something like that.
Great. Well, Miranda, thanks so much for coming on Miracle Voices and sharing your miracle voice. It was a pleasure to have you on and to hear all the things you're doing with NHS and beyond. I wasn't kidding when I said we're just tapping into your flow state. That's what I felt like. It was just a joy. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It's just been such an honor and a pleasure to chat with you guys. Really, thank you so much for having me today.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote: when you want only love, you will see nothing else.